This episode is brought to you by Ursa Minor Outfitters. Folks, I'm absolutely in love with my Loon mug. It's handmade. It's an absolute piece of art. Whether it's at the office or at the house, people keep asking to check it out. If you're not a Loon fan, they also have other beautiful mugs for wildlife fans of moose, bears, and eagles. They specialize in products highlighting the outdoors and local pride through quality design by local artists. They've even started expanding into items beyond mugs, like apparel, dog accessories, and soon candles and more. They also try to partner and highlight other small businesses, and in some cases, forgo profits in lieu of charitable giving to help their community, such as the dog rescue. So check them out, ursaminoroutfitters.com, and enter promo code HIKESMIKES10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. And for our four-legged hiking partners, they also have a portable silicone dog bowl and also a sweet over-the-collar dog bandana. Go check them out, ursaminoroutfitters.com, and don't forget to enter promo code HIKESMIKES10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. Welcome, everyone, to a special bonus episode of the Hikes and Mikes podcast. I'm your host, Ivan, and occasionally I'll be bringing you some bonus episodes highlighting some amazing individuals who are participating in some fun outdoor events or helping some incredible nonprofits, as well as some up-and-coming outdoor companies. Regular episodes will continue to come out on Mondays, and when we have a bonus episode, those will drop on Fridays. Welcome to our latest bonus episode featuring Justin, aka Just Rock, from Just Trek, an outdoor-inspired podcast, hiking group, indie apparel brand, and blog. The platform aims to inspire, motivate, and elevate people to a higher state of well-being. Elevation is their recreation. In this episode, Justin shares with us some of his favorite hikes in and around LA County. From the coastal hikes to high elevation peaks, LA has a hike for all hikers. We learn about how Just Trek started, how a day hike up Mount Whitney turned into nearly a 24-hour day, and some of the amazing group hikes he hosts, including a Star Wars-themed hike through the landscape used in The Mandalorian. Without further ado, let's dive right into this episode with our guest, Justin. Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Hikes and Mikes podcast. I'm here with Just Rock, aka Justin from Just Trek. I'm really excited to speak about the community that he's building in the LA hiking scene, a scene that, you know, growing up for me, I was always wanting to explore what LA had to offer. So I'm really stoked to be able to talk to him about the LA hiking scene and just the SoCal hiking scene in general. Thanks, Justin, for coming on the podcast. I'm really stoked to have you.
Super excited to be here. And I just got to say, I absolutely love the name, man. Like when I first heard and saw the name Hikes and Mikes, I thought it was like a freestyle freestyle rap, like outdoor brand or something along those lines.
You know what's funny, and I'm pretty sure they're based out of LA, but before the pandemic there was a comedy group that was doing events called Hikes and Mikes, where you would have to hike to a location to hear stand-up comedy.
No way.
Yeah, so I didn't know about it until like after I started it, but just to make sure that I wasn't copywriting on anybody, that's the one thing I saw where, yeah, there's this group of individuals that I think maybe on a monthly basis were going out to parks in LA and just having people hike out to where they would perform their stand-up.
You got to shoot me over some of that content. I'm super intrigued.
Okay,
now.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Just Rock, one of the first questions we always like to ask our guests is how they got started hiking and how long they've been doing it for.
Oh, man. So I've gone through a metamorphosis of sorts, I would say, the past several years. I actually just hit my 6-year hiking, trekking anniversary back in April, beginning of April. And it was kind of this crazy moment to be like, wow, I've like immersed myself in this new active lifestyle and community the past 6 years. And to get into how I got into hiking, I guess I would describe it as, so before I became like this outdoor-centric person and became this avid hiker, I came from the dance community. Like that was who I was. I was Just Rock the Dope B-Boy, event producer, talent manager. And I had been doing that for such a long time, for like, I don't know, 15 plus years. And before I found hiking, I had stopped dancing for like 3 to 4 years, right? So I just had this like emptiness, this void. You know, I felt uninspired, you know, mixed in with other things prior to me becoming a hiker. Like I was going through depressive episodes and I was just trying to find purpose again. And I was just yearning for also a new, you know, like activity or passion. And it was like that void that I had from the lack of dancing and being immersed in that culture and that community led me to hiking because I moved to LA. I'm based in Los Angeles. I moved out here from the East Coast in 2004. I went out here for college. And it's crazy because, you know, living in LA for like many years, kind of like, I felt like I experienced it in so many different spaces and communities, from like the dance world to marketing, festivals, the food scene, working for a travel company, just highlighting all the awesome local places to explore, like more of like the urban exploration. But the one thing I never did after 13 years of living here was actually explore local trails and mountains. And this still like blows my mind till this day. Like, of course, yeah, I went to the beach or maybe did like a fitness hike down the street, but I never explored the Santa Monica Mountains, Griffith Park, the Angeles National Forest, San Gabriel Mountains, or the surrounding areas. And that journey for me started back in 2017 by just exploring our local trails in Malibu. And that just kind of put me on this new path in life of, you know, it was, I first did it to like improve like my physical fitness. But then it, as I got deeper and deeper into it, you know, it just started to give me so much more like health benefits besides the physical aspect.
And I think you hit it on the head. You know, it was something that I knew about, but, you know, doing research on this episode, it definitely made me more aware. But the LA hiking scene is really diverse as far as like landscape, because you have the coastal trails, mountainous trails, and even urban hiking. How would you describe the LA hiking scene now that you've been a part of it for a couple of years?
Oh, my goodness. Like, I know I'm being biased, Ivan, and there's a lot of special places all over the country, but I really believe that LA is one of the best hiking cities in the country. Let me explain, because that's not a notion you often hear, yeah. Right? Typically, you think of cities and places such as, you know, Seattle or Portland, you know, Washington State, Oregon, Utah, maybe Arizona, yeah. Right? You don't think of LA as like necessarily this destination to, or Southern California as this like prime outdoor destination to go hiking and exploring. That's only for like if you're actually in the community and you're more of a local, that you kind of know what's up. But like what you just said, there is just a tremendous amount of diverse amount of trails and terrain, from the coastal landscapes of the Santa Monica Mountains to the big peaks in the San Gabriel Mountains / Angeles National Forest. And even east of that, you have the San Bernardino Mountains. And then even if you go out of, there's so many areas outside of LA County, you know, that you can explore. Like you have the Cleveland National Forest further down south. Further up, you got the Los Padres National Forest. You got Joshua Tree. You go further up north, you have like Santa Barbara, you have Death Valley, you got Yosemite, you got the Eastern Sierras. Like, I've just really fallen in love with like exploring everything in LA and the surrounding areas. It's really been a pretty wild journey just re-experiencing the Southern California landscape and LA, my city, through this outdoor lens. It's been really life-changing.
It's truly remarkable because, I mean, you have, you know, the pick of the litter when it comes to hikes just in LA County. But like you said, once you go outside of LA County, it's a perfect launch pad to either Joshua Tree or Yosemite, Death Valley. I mean, it's in a prime location if you're looking just for a day hike. But then if you got the weekend, you can go,
yes,
you know, a few hours and be in a completely different landscape. So for you that's been able to, you know, see a lot of these different places, do you have some favorite spots specifically in and around LA?
So in LA County specifically, my all-time favorite hike is this peak called Sandstone Peak. And this is not even just my favorite in LA or SoCal. This is just ever. And I've experienced some pretty special places that are up there. But Sandstone Peak in the Santa Monica Mountains is number one for me. And the reason it is because that was really the hike in my beginning hiking journey that truly opened up my mind to the feeling that I wanted to explore like everything that Southern California had to offer. And I also accidentally did it for sunset. And if anyone's familiar with Sandstone Peak, it is arguably the best place to experience a sunset ever, just because there's so many massive rock formations around you. You see the sun setting over the Pacific Ocean. You can see the Channel Islands National Park in the distance. Like up there, it just feels like the whole world is glowing during sunset. So that particular place holds a very special place in my journey, I would say.
I mean, from the pictures, because it does come up frequently in your feed.
Yes.
It has.
We have a hashtag for it.
What's the hashtag?
Sandstone Forever. It's a hashtag that my crew, the Just Trek crew, has adopted because it's like an insider reference, right? It's like, if you know, you know. And if you've been up there for sunset or even maybe the full moon, you know how special and magical that landscape is.
Yeah, because that viewpoint, that ledge that's, is that the summit or is that a little bit below the summit that you've taken pictures of?
Oh man, it depends which picture you're referring to, but
it's like a rock slab that has a beautiful overlook of the mountains and I think even the ocean.
Yeah, I believe that's a portion of the peak, of Sandstone Peak. But here's the thing of Sandstone Peak, there's so many offshoot trails that you can go on like these side quest adventures, almost like in a video game. Like, I've literally returned to this area, this general area, like I must have been there at least 40 plus times, and it's always been a different experience each time because we either do it a certain way or we explore a little further or we go down this offshoot trail. And always, like, sometimes the weather is just different during the time of the year and the vegetation. So it's a place that we always make sunset pilgrimages to. And I actually hosted a group hike there recently with the person that whose hiking guide inspired me to check it out, which is Casey Schreiner, founder of Modern Hiker, if anyone's in tune with who that is. But yeah, it's... If you ever come down to LA, Ivan, I definitely have to bring you up there and have you soak in the renewing energy and the majesty of Sandstone Peak.
Oh, I'll definitely take you up on that because it would be a beautiful place for sunset. But like you said, on a full moon night, I can only imagine what it is up there away from, you know, a lot of the light pollution that's within the city. It kind of transports you to almost like a different place.
Oh my goodness, Ivan, you hit the nail on the head. Like, Sandstone Peak, that area is in a very like remote part of like the Santa Monica Mountains. And you're right, the light pollution is very minimal there. And it's actually an incredible night hike. Like, you can see like the stars just shining so vibrantly. You can actually see like this other county. It's called Ventura County, mm-hmm. Oxnard. You can actually see city lights in the distance too. So this, the transition from like the sun setting to it going to the night is also its own adventure in and of itself.
Yeah, I can only imagine the viewpoint up there at night. Justin, one of the things that's really unique about LA, besides having, you know, those coastal and mountainous hiking terrains, but you also have some great urban hiking opportunities. For you, is there any memorable urban hiking spots that you like to visit?
Yeah, there's two in particular that are favorites of mine. Definitely Griffith Park, the world famous Griffith Park.
Sure.
It's like, what, the second largest municipal park or urban wilderness in the country, something along those lines. There's so many trails within it. It's very accessible from the city, no matter where you're, what part you are at. It's great for night hiking. It actually has like a night hiking culture. Oh, you know, you have the Griffith Observatory there. And even though that's like this huge tourist destination, it's so spectacular to see it lit up at night or just to hike up to it during the day. There's like many different sections to it. You know, there's obviously touristy sections, but there's also parts on the western side of the Griffith Park that have trails that are much more isolated and rugged, where you can feel like a much more of a, not backcountry, but, you know, away from the crowds and also get a good workout in. So Griffith Park is always going to be a staple in the hiking, LA hiking scene, hiking community. But one that I feel is very underrated and not as explored is actually this park called Kennethon State Park that is only 15 minutes from LAX. And it sounds crazy, right? Like, you wouldn't think like maybe there's this amazing park 15 minutes from one of the busiest airports in the world, yeah. Right? And Kennethon State Park just has so many like ways you can enjoy it. There's like this beautiful pond with so much wildlife and birds and ducks just like roaming around freely. There's like a Japanese Zen garden. It's got these rolling hills. It's got these open meadows. There's a Martin Luther King Memorial there. Great views of downtown LA, and then you can even see downtown LA with the backdrop of the San Gabriel Mountains, maybe snow-capped if it's the winter time. And what makes this park also really special is it's now connected to this brand new nature center called the Stoneview Nature mm-hmm. Center, which is a community garden. And it's also connected to this other place called the Culver City Stairs, Baldwin Hill Scenic Overlook. So they finally finished like this construction where you could not only enjoy Kennethon State Park, but you could literally walk maybe less than 10 minutes out of it on this connected trail and experience like the adjacent parks next to it as well. So they've done a great job of building out that park infrastructure for all kinds of people to, you know, just have outdoor recreation, whether you're young, your middle years, or you're older.
Wow, I'm going to have to add that to the list. I haven't heard about that one. And the fact that it's so close to LAX, if you have to catch a flight and you want to kill some time and enjoy nature, it seems like it's a good spot.
Oh, yeah, it's an oasis for sure. Great for picnics as well. I personally love just hanging out next to the Glenmore Lake Pond, if anyone wants to check that out. It feels like you're familiar with, like, you know, Central Park, yeah. Right? And the ponds there. Yeah, it's like that, but much bigger.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I'll definitely link it in the episode show notes so people can check it out, because it sounds like a pretty remarkable place, and especially being within the LA city limits. Justin, we've already been talking about this, but for you being an Angeleno, when you do have a free weekend that comes up, which direction are you heading to go hiking? Because you have so many options from north, south, east, west. What are some of your favorite hiking destinations outside of LA?
Hands down, the Eastern Sierras. That which is... I read this from a blog, but I really believe it. Eastern Sierras is California's prized mountain range. You know, it's home to Mount Whitney, the tallest mountain in all of the continental United States, actually. And it's only 4 hours north of LA. Like, sure, yeah, we got Joshua Tree. I enjoy Joshua Tree a lot, too. But when I finally got to do Mount Whitney and just explore more of, like, the Eastern Sierras, that general area, my jaw dropped. I couldn't believe that we had a landscape such as this, home to so many 14ers. And 13ers and Alpine Lake galore, just like 4 hours north of LA. I just assumed, like, to get that kind of experience, you'd have to drive maybe like 8 hours up or take a plane flight. But no, I mean, a 4 hour drive from LA is basically you going to Vegas. And I'd rather go to the Eastern Sierras than go to Vegas at this point in my life.
Yeah, I didn't realize they were that close. You know, that tends to be one of the common answers for people in Southern California is the Eastern Sierras is where it's at. And for me, being a fan of, you know, those crazy looking rock formations and the beautiful lakes, it just seems like it's a spectacular place to visit and explore. And you've already touched base on it, but how was it hiking up Mount Whitney? You know, we've had a couple guests that have done it through backpacking trips and a day hike. One of the common things everyone has said, Justin, is that's the one peak that makes them experience altitude sickness.
Oh my God, Ivan, it's... The Mount Whitney journey was a literal movie. It was the most overwhelming day of my life and the most beautiful and gorgeous day of my life, both at the same time. And to your point, it's a 14er. It's the tallest 14er in the lower 48 states. Elevation sickness or acute mountain sickness is such a real thing. Like, there's so many people that if they don't acclimate properly, and even if you do acclimate properly, it's kind of like the great equalizer. You don't know how your body's actually going to adjust to it until the day of. Like, there's so many people that have to turn around midway up, a mile from the summit, because you don't want to mess around with altitude sickness. You know, like, in extreme cases, you can die from it. And also, you don't want to be miserable on the mountain and find yourself injured on a 14er. Like, that's a very serious kind of landscape to be on, like, not feeling good and just really, like, delirious and out of it. But to answer your question, man, like, it would be its own podcast episode, the Mount Whitney journey, but I did it as a day hike. So it was a 22-mile, I think it's 21 or 22-mile day hike. And I think I did it in July 2019. And in that particular year, we had some, like, late storms. And it really creeped into the middle of summer, because typically when you do it in mid-July, like, the trail's completely clear. But when I did it, there was still a lot of snow. It wasn't a mountaineering route per se, but there was still tons of snow on the mountain, to the point where as you were hiking up, just streams coming down the trail or the steps, it was just being covered by so much water. And it just was like this magical contrast of, like, the snow melting and then the dryness of Mount Whitney, along with just the dramatic, you know, craggy mountain faces of the Mount Whitney landscape. And the day was just so intense too, because, you know, obviously when we summited the mountain, it was the most exhilarating feeling. It felt like forever. But, you know, 11 miles up means you got to come 11 miles down, right? And you got to start this hike at like midnight or 2 a.m. Like, it really asks a lot of you to do this as a day hike, and which is why you have to have trained for it for like several weeks or a couple of months before you even attempt this, if you want to do it in the best shape as possible. And one thing I do want to share with you quickly is the reason that day was so overwhelming was because a girl on our group got injured. She dislocated her knee on this one section and she actually had to get helicoptered out. So that whole experience, I'm actually going to have you guess how long I was on the mountain.
I would say, knowing that you have to start so early, 24 hours.
Wow. That's a really good guess. 22.5 hours.
Oh my goodness. That's a full day basically. Oh my.
It was really intense.
Do you remember, Justin, what time you started and what time you got back to to the trailhead?
Oh my God. We started at 2 a.m., which is its own out-of-body surreal experience, you know, just trekking through the night and then seeing. I probably saw one of the most magical sunrises of my entire life on Mount Whitney at this place called Trail Camp. And then I think I got back to the car around, it was like 11 p.m. around that.
Oh, man.
Absurdity, man. Just like, because we lost a lot of hours when we had to go through the whole protocol of using the Garmin device to call the helicopter. And that whole process took like 3 hours. And that's a lot of, you know, time lost when you're doing something like a Mount Whitney as a day hike. Mm-hmm. It was pretty crazy, man. Like, because what happens is when a helicopter comes, it can only bring the injured party. It's not bringing your whole crew.
And that's a good point. And I definitely want to ask, because not too many people that have the Garmin inReach or satellite communication have had to hit the SOS. For you that's experienced that process, how is it hitting the button and going through the motions to get help?
Yeah, so for full transparency, I was alongside the process. So the girl whose permit that we were on, she was the leader because she was the one putting it all together, right? She literally got the Garmin a week before Mount Whitney.
Oh, no kid.
But to walk you through the process of what I remember and observed was, you know, when my friend dislocated her knee, you know, we had to get down to this place called Trail Camp. So there was at least like a community of people to, you know, be there, you know, in case we needed help. And so the thing is, when you use the Garmin device to send a signal out for an SOS, right? There's like an SOS button. Then it goes through it's a waiting game. You got to wait for them to get back to you. And then they get back to you maybe after, like, I don't know, it could be like 15 minutes, 30 minutes, or even an hour. Then they ask you a series of questions like, where are you located? What part of the mountain? What do you have? And then you basically text back or respond back with different prompts. Or I think you can also like be more specific, like, this is our situation, this is where we're at. And then they basically respond back saying, hey, we're going to assess and evaluate if we can, you know, what the next step is, whether it's sending people up the mountain to grab the injured hiker with a gurney, or if they can send a helicopter if there's any available, or if they can't get you. Which is also a very common reality, because when we called the Garmin device, it was like, and when we called for help, it was around like 3 p.m. And that's really late in the day. And, you know, we're on a 14er. We're not on like a 5,000-foot mountain or like a local hike. You know, like, sometimes depending where you're at and how late in the day it is, a helicopter can't be sent, which is why you really got to take these major day hikes and major peaks very seriously. So long story short, it took 3 hours for them to confirm that, hey, we're able to send a helicopter out to you, but only for the injured party. And at this point, you know, the girl... I actually interviewed her on the podcast. It's pretty wild. I'll have to put you on in that episode. But she was freaking out because she's like, I don't want to, you know, she's thinking about the expenses.
Oh, very true.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, how much am I going to have to pay? Can you ask them how much it's going to be? I come to find out later that it was a helicopter. It was a California Highway Patrol. And that's, you know, paid by our taxes. So in that particular instance, it was free. Thank God. But if a private helicopter has to be sent out, that's when you're going to have to, like, you know, chalk up the money and just kind of, you know, eat it. But that's the process to how much I can remember it. So hopefully that provides some insight to if anyone needs to, you know, use their Garmin device or their SOS device.
No, definitely. Yeah, that's something to keep in mind, depending on your location and the severity of the injury, that it might take a couple hours for rescue to show up. You know, so many people have the SOS or the satellite communicators now, but it's good to know, like, what exactly the process might be if they have to hit that button.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a must, especially when you tackle these 14ers or these major peaks. It's also just good to have it on you just in case, you know, like, sometimes you are not going to use it for yourself or someone in your group, but for an injured hiker that you come across on the trail, that's also when it comes super handy. And I also know like the new, at least I know for the iPhone, like the iPhone 14, like there's like a new SOS emergency thing built in that I actually still have to play around with. So that's good to know. Or satellite communicator.
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad that it's becoming more and more accessible for folks to be able to reach out in case of an emergency. You know, Justin, I imagine hiking these 14ers and other hike peaks, especially like Mount Baldy, just outside of LA.
Yes.
You work up an appetite, and the LA food scene, and to me personally, this is my opinion. People can disagree, but the LA food scene is one of the best food scenes in the country. You have such a diverse and fusion and anything you can think of, LA has it. When it comes to your post-hike meals, what are your top three chain restaurants? But then on the flip side, what are your top three just like small mom and pop places or maybe just cuisines that you prefer to check out after a hike?
Yeah, sure. So got me thinking of where I'm always eating after these hikes. So for top three chain restaurants, I definitely remember going to Blaze Pizza many times. And I just love Blaze Pizza because one, it's affordable. And two, you can customize your pizza however many which way and throw as many toppings on there as possible. Typically, when I go to Blaze Pizza, I always try to make some sort of a margarita pizza with like chicken and but with ricotta. I just got to say, I love this question because, you know, we fantasize about what we want to eat. Sometimes as soon as we step foot on the trail, right?
Exactly. That's the reward that pushes you up the mountain sometimes.
Gets you through all those, the grind of the journey if it happens to be a challenging hike. Blaze Pizza, I would say can't go wrong with Chipotle, a really fat burrito. Oh, and In-N-Out, duh. In-N-Out. Like, I wouldn't be a true Angeleno or Southern California resident if I wouldn't go to In-N-Out after, you know, after these treks. Of course, double-double, animal-style fries, that pink lemonade. Yeah, In-N-Out is always always a winner. Very affordable burger. Best bang for your buck.
And when it comes to like just small mom and pop places or maybe just cuisines, is there one that you gravitate towards?
Yeah. So here in West LA, I live in West LA, which is like Culver City, like Venice Beach, like Santa Monica, that general area. There is this place. Well, it's a food truck originally that was founded by this really famous chef called Roy Choi. Are you familiar? Yeah. So I'm talking about the Kogi taco food truck, the Kogi barbecue food cuisine. And it's just like, I guess a simple way of describing it is like Korean-Mexican fusion from like quesadillas, from their tacos, from different bowls, Korean spiced fries. Like it is, oh my God, like it's probably one of my, even if I'm not hiking, I love going there. Like going to the Kogi barbecue taco truck, whether it's the actual truck itself or there is this bar that serves the actual menu as well. It's called Alibi Room. So whether it's going to the taco truck or Alibi Room, it's very unique to LA as well. Because, you know, just the rich Korea, we have the largest K-town in the country. And then, you know, basically, you know, California was Mexico. So there's so many Latino people here. It's such incredible Mexican food and cuisine. I would argue that Kogi has the best quesadillas I've ever had in my life. Sweet chicken chili quesadilla or the blackjack, you can't go wrong. It's the Korean spices and just the way the meat is just flavored. It's just, it's the most satisfying thing ever. Yeah, you got me hungry, man.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. You know, kind of exploring outside of LA, Justin, you've been to two places that I've considered home in my adult years, and that's the Pacific Northwest and Hawaii. What have been your hiking experiences up in the Pacific Northwest and also on the islands?
Yeah, sure. So I actually lived in Seattle for a year. And I lived there in 2009. I basically went up there after college. But I didn't actually get to explore any hikes or trails because I wasn't outdoorsy yet. But the past couple of years, I think I actually finally got to explore some of your signature local trails, like around the Seattle area. And I got to tell you, Ivan, I was blown away by your quote unquote basic hikes out there that are like 30 minutes outside of the city. I remember doing, it's called a Rattlesnake Ledge. I did Little Si. I also did that hike near the city, maybe like 15 minutes, Discovery Park. And those were the three that I remember doing. Yeah. And I want to comment on Rattlesnake Ledge because that was my first real Seattle hike. And what my local friends were telling me were like, oh, yeah, that's like our basic hike out here. That's a really popular one. It's only like 30 minutes outside of the city. And I think it was back in like December 2020 when I first did it.
Oh, wow.
around that time. And I gotta tell you, man, when I went out there with my friend Brian, shout outs to Brian, founder of Hype Pins. Actually, should put you onto his website. I think you'd really like his pin collection. Okay. I was absolutely blown away by how a basic Seattle hike looked like. It was so, the trees looked unreal, just like the patterns of it. Just like, it was like this beautiful, like geometry, like layered out trees. It was like too perfect. And then I know there's like a lake at the bottom, but it was dried up. But even though there wasn't water, it was like this Silent Hill, misty, like eerie, beautiful view, because it had all these like chopped logs, like on the ground that you could like stand up on or just kind of like explore around. And then when I actually hiked the trail itself, like going up the switchbacks to the different viewpoints where you could see over the lake. Oh my God. So I did this in December, so it was still winter time. And I remember getting to this one viewpoint that I had researched on All Trails that said, if you get to this third viewpoint, it's extra epic. And when I got up there, I felt like I was transported into this like winter Narnia world. I went underneath these trees, snow fell on me. And then I went all the way to this like ledge that was completely covered in snow. And then I could see in the distance, this really prominent peak that was showing in the middle of these clouds. Like the clouds had just opened up when I got to the top. I got to show you the photo. It's I was so like, this is 30 minutes outside of the city. Like, I feel like I'm in Alaska. I couldn't believe how much the trail was giving me, like view-wise and just adventure-wise. That was a really special one that I always remember. And I was like, wow, like, this is their backyard, you know? Like, I wonder what else they have.
No, yeah. And I'm glad you did it in the winter, Justin, because it is a popular hike in the summer, but I got a chance to do it a few years ago in the winter. And it's like, oh, I enjoy the views in the summer, but the winter with a few less people, get the summit, you know, sometimes to yourself for just a few minutes or maybe longer. But just the moodiness of the hills, the clouds, it adds a different layer that I think makes it a little bit more unique in the winter compared to the summer bluebird days.
Perfect adjective, moody. Just the mist rolling through the, what kind of trees do you have there?
Conifer, so evergreens, you know, pine trees.
Yeah, beautiful conifer evergreen trees, just with the fog and the mist rolling through like a lake that has no water. I was like, this is like some like end of the world, beautiful outdoor like landscape.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to mention this too. I saw my first mountain goats ever in Seattle. It was on Little Si, and I always remember that. And they were, it wasn't at the beginning of the trailhead, but maybe like 1 mile in, they were like layered up the mountain. Like it was like almost like they were paid actors you could take photos of. And when I say they're white, like down here in SoCal, we have bighorn sheep, right? They're really special and very rare to view and see. They're very elusive. But when I saw a mountain goat in person, it looks like a wildlife or an animal that was like sent from like the mountain heavens. You know, it's a sight to see and very special. And I saw like five of them, but they were all like on different ledges, like above each other. And I was like, what is going on? Like, are they warning me not to go further? Like, it was really cool.
So one of the other spots, Justin, that, you know, you got a chance to visit and explore, and you got to do one of my favorite ridge hikes on the island, and that's Willy Willy Nui on the island of Oahu. How was it hiking that ridge hike and exploring the islands?
That's incredible that you did that ridge hike as well, because that was probably the most dramatic 360 degree view I've ever experienced on any hike of my life. So I was visiting Hawaii with some friends, and one of my friends had moved to Oahu from Seattle, okay. And he's actually like a hip-hop artist, but he was getting acquainted with the trails there. And I remember he was like, yo, let's do this hike. And I was like, yeah, sure, like I'm down for it all, because at that point I was a hiker. And I remember looking it up on All Trails, and I was like, whoa, this looks epic. And the name itself is such a fun name to say, Willy Willy Nui Ridge. And it's challenging, but it's doable, right? It's like around like, I don't know, 6 miles or something like that, right?
Yeah.
6-7 miles?
Not too far.
One thing I always remember, and that's not only with this hike, but with just Hawaii hiking in general, is how muddy it can get.
Oh, for sure.
Crazy that can get on a ridge. And that's its own distinction of Hawaii hikes, you know, like it's a tropical island, like rain comes in and out. The terrain might be muddy, and there's usually ropes sometimes to help you go down like the muddy steps. I remember there was a section going up Willy Willy Nui Ridge, and I had to grab onto a rope, and it was muddy steps, and it was really slippery. And even if you have the proper footwear, it doesn't matter because the mud, you know, covers your grip.
Yeah, it just
so it doesn't matter. Exactly. So you're just literally skating on the terrain. Yeah, man. I remember when I got to the top. So, you know, when you get to the top, you get to like that antenna. But if you go a little further down to, I think, the actual real summit, there's like a bench.
Yeah.
And then when you get to that further point on the summit, you can literally see all sides of the 360 panoramic views of the entire island. And it just gives you this grand appreciation of, whoa, this is what Oahu Island looks like from all angles. I'd never seen a view like that in my life. I was like, my jaw just dropped. I remember just taking a bunch of content on my GoPro and was just so like, I was like one of like four people on that summit. And when we got to the top, the weather was just like perfect. It wasn't like raining. It wasn't, there wasn't much cloud. So I could actually see the blueness of the ocean surrounding everything, the other mountains in the distance, the city in the distance of Waikiki. I was just like, for anyone who has never been to Hawaii or just hiking in Hawaii in general, it's literally paradise. It's outdoor hiking paradise. Like, doesn't matter usually what trail you do, even if it's a touristy trail like Diamond Head, like you will be blown away. That is definitely one of my top ridge hikes I've ever done in terms of panoramic views, hands down.
Yeah, I'm so happy that you got a clear day because, you know, some of those ridge hikes, it might be clear at the bottom. And then once you get to the top, you get sunken into the clouds, which adds its own beauty. But like you said, you got a perfect day where you can see, you know, the windward side of Oahu, the town side, and even all the way down to Ewa Beach and Waianae. You know, you got a perfect day up there. And, you know, one of the funny things transitioning from Hawaii back to the Pacific Northwest is in Hawaii, because things are so muddy, I just got used to wearing board shorts as my hiking apparel. After one of those muddy hikes, you know, if there's a stream or next to the beach, you just run in, you know, rinse off and you're good to go.
Yeah, you learned. You're like, you know what? Board shorts is the way to go. And I mean, they're breathable. And then especially when you're in a place like Hawaii, you want to jump into those waterfalls and those streams or those swimming holes.
And you not only experienced Oahu, but you also had a chance to visit Maui as well on a different trip, right? Or was it the same one?
Yes. So I went out to Maui for a childhood best friend's wedding. And I was like, yes, I am absolutely going to be there. I've never been to Maui. And I got to also go with my parents because this person that I actually went out for lived. So I'm originally from Baltimore, Maryland. She literally lived like 5 minutes walking distance from my townhouse back home. So it was cool to like reunite with her and like the old East Coast familia in this, you know, wondrous landscape, that being Maui. And that was its own adventure. Like, I remember doing like the road to Hana with my parents. I went snorkeling at Honolulu Bay, and that was its own scary experience and beautiful experience because a shark circled me and I cut my back on the coral reef.
There's so many
things that happened on that trip. Yeah, I kind of threw a bunch of things at you all at the same time.
And how big of a shark was it?
Oh man, it was probably, it's pretty sizable, probably like 4 feet.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Maui, it definitely attracts the sharks, especially like around Little Beach and Big Beach. But I'm glad you got to experience, you know, especially that side of the island, the Hana side, where it's a little less crowded, but, you know, you get the black sand beach. There's even red sand beach. And
oh, yes, that's right. The red sand beach and the black sand beach. Yeah. I remember that that was one of the stopovers on the road to Hana journey.
Well, we've been talking about it, Justin, but, you know, for our listeners, you've started the Just Trek community, which is, you know, not just a podcast, but it's really like a lifestyle channel that you've created. Can you share with us a little bit about the origin story?
Yeah, sure. So when I first began my hiking journey, which was back in April 2017, you know, I was just going on a bunch of hikes and then, you know, taking a ton of photos. And I wanted to document that on like a separate Instagram account, right? So I have my personal one, which is Just Rock, JustRoc. And then I was like, I have way too many hiking photos. I need to make a separate account, right? So I created Just Trek. So that's the origin of at least the Instagram account, right? And then in 2019, I started the actual... So Just Trek, just for context, I like to describe it as an outdoor community platform that consists of an LA-based hiking group. And it's also an outdoor adventure podcast, such as yours. And I've just been nurturing this online and in real life community through these two like pillars, right? And it first started out as an Instagram account, just documenting my different hikes with like, you know, I guess, quote unquote, cool captions. And I evolved from that. And I said, well, I definitely want a hiking crew and a hiking group to share my adventures with, right? Because when I came from the dance world, I was a part of a few dance crews. So I always knew in the back of my mind that I wanted to have an actual hiking crew, right? So that got started in 2019. We're actually going to be celebrating the Just Trek crew 4-year anniversary in the beginning of August of this year.
Oh, congrats.
Thanks, man. It's been a wonderful journey. So Just Trek really started as a hiking group first. And then a year later in 2020, I launched the Just Trek podcast at the height of the pandemic, as I'm sure a lot of other podcasts also started, or other content creators, right? And it was just that, you know, that universal feeling us as hikers felt, you know, during the pandemic of, wow, they closed down our local trails and mountains, right? Like, I didn't even know you could shut down the outdoors. And I was just so immensely upset. And I just remember as I was trying to process, you know, the pandemic week by week, I was just so immensely upset because, you know, I turned to the trails for so much, you know, to improve my physical fitness, to fortify my mental health, for healing, and also to do deep reflection on life, you know, and how to go about life next, you know, what are the next steps. And I was like, I just had this really strong epiphany during that time in like March 2020. I was like, well, if I can't be in the outdoors, I'm going to talk about it and share my story, my hiking outdoor transformation, and, you know, and elevate the voices of others in the community that I follow or that I find interesting. And I actually, the podcast launch is really special to me because I launched it on my birthday, March 31st, 2020. And originally I was supposed to do a Venice Beach party with like all my friends DJing, but we couldn't do that, right? So I decided to flip my birthday on its head and said, it's not going to be a celebration anymore, but more like I'm going to dedicate my birthday to elevating myself to a higher place through this creative endeavor, that being the Just Trek podcast. And I'm sure you feel the same way, having this podcast and having these intimate transformational conversations with people in the community is just, it's just a rare thing to have these kind of conversations. And a lot of times these convos are very impactful and can be very life-changing and just connects you to some of the most inspirational people that you never thought you might have been connected to otherwise. And we recently celebrated the Just Trek podcast 3-year anniversary back in the beginning of April. And I did my first ever live podcast show where I had like a panel of previous podcast guests, and that was a big hit. So I think I want to continue that format. But the journey of Just Trek, whether it's from the hiking group or the podcast, it's really been just this life-changing project and creative endeavor that I've poured my heart and soul into. And I love just spreading the gospel of the outdoors and how we can benefit from it and how also we can give back to it at the same time. So that's the gist of it. For the most part, the crew's been around almost 4 years, the podcast 3 years, and it's been really interesting growing it from both sides, you know, in the community aspects through community events, and then just through this online platform, that being the podcast, and cultivating a listenership.
Oh, that's amazing. And yeah, props to you for being able to do the live podcast, because that's something that's always intrigued me. But, you know, it adds a
layer. I was so nervous.
It adds a layer of complexity, and the episode came out great. And it's so awesome that you're able to bring back, you know, previous guests and have them there and interact with the community that you developed.
It was very special. It also was took a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to execute that, because I felt like I was throwing two events or producing two events in one, because there's the general event, right? And then now there's the live podcast portion that I have to prepare for and execute and get a bunch of people involved in. And hopefully that goes well, because that's my first time trying to pull off something like that. You know, I'd never done a panel before. It was ever like a moderator, you know, for like more than one guest, you know, so it was all a learning experience. But I like to push myself, and that's where, you know, when you seek discomfort, that's when you actually grow and really sharpen your skill set in whatever you do.
Yeah, man. The episode came out amazing, and you hit it on the head. You know, for me doing this, I've always been a day hiker. I've car camped or camped at campgrounds, but talking to these inspirational hikers and guests has, you know, changed my mindset to, you know, we're recording this at the end of June. Coming July 4th, I'm not only going to be going on my first backpacking experience, but I'm also going to be going on my first backpacking experience with my first virtual guest, which is Sarah at the Wild Compiled. She's taking me up to the North Cascades with her fiance. And yeah, it's going to be an experience that I'm hoping I can share with the listeners. But if it wasn't for the podcast, you know, I think I would have stayed a day hiker, but I'm looking forward to the next evolution of it.
And that's the best feeling, Ivan, when you actually connect in real life with the previous podcast guest. It just really deepens that bond. And you feel like you have a brand new, well, not brand new, but you feel like you have a really close friend because you just had this like really intentional and beautiful conversation with them.
Yeah, exactly. You hit it right on the head on that, man. And, you know, you've talked about the community that you've developed and the community hikes that you've done. The one that caught my attention, because I'm a huge Mandalorian fan, but you did a Star Wars community hike, right?
Yes, it was a... I was really proud of that one, man, because it was very unique. And I did it as a collaboration group hike with my good friend Juan Flores from he's the founder of Outdoor Adventure Plus, which is also an outdoor group based out of Bakersfield, even though they host a lot of community events in Southern California and LA. And that's really awesome that you saw that, because we went all out. Like, we got props, we had giveaways. The trail itself is so accessible to the city, and it's very unique. It feels like you're a world's away, even though it's next to the freeway. That hike was special. It's Rocky Peak Summit Trail in the Simi Valley area, which is about maybe 45 minutes outside of like downtown LA.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that was that close. And, you know, based on the flyer that I read, like a lot of the landscape shots in The Mandalorian, but some of the landscape shots were filmed in and around that area, right?
Oh, yeah. The most iconic battle scenes from The Mandalorian were filmed there. It was, I think the episode's called, it was the one Planet Tython? Yeah, I believe it was a Planet Tython. And that's where they had the iconic battle scene where a Boba Fett popped out and destroyed the battleships.
Oh.
With his rocket launcher. That's the exact same terrain. And we actually got to point it out to all the attendees, our fellow trekkers. And it was just, I'm still very like over the moon about that collaboration and that we got to bring a bunch of Star Wars lovers there. And that's really cool that you brought that up on this pod, because that was a very unique collaboration.
And I think I remember the episode. That's where Baby Yoda, Grogu, is sitting on the stone and he's communicating with the Force. And then Mando and Boba Fett are fighting off the stormtroopers. And
100% correct. That is exactly the terrain and landscape. That is that scene.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I wore a stormtrooper mask. It was way too hot. And then people brought lightsabers. My friend even brought his friend's like a Mandalorian helmet prop that was like several hundreds of dollars.
Oh, no kidding.
It was a vibe.
Yeah, man. Hopefully you do it again and it becomes an annual thing, because if you do, I'm coming to the next one.
Oh, we're going to make it an annual thing for sure. The reception on that was, we got a lot of love on that. And, you know, we pour a lot of love into our community group hikes, because I come from a event producing background. So we always try to add the little details to make it extra memorable. And I think we did that on that day. So we'd love to have you when we host it again next year. Hopefully it's in might be in like February or March.
Oh, for sure, man. Anything to escape the cold Pacific Northwest winter sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Mind you, that hike was in a mountain range that I had no clue about. A much smaller mountain range within LA County called the Santa Susana. Kind of part of the Santa Monica Mountains, but it's actually its own mini mountain range. And I'm just always discovering new things about LA County and like the different terrains and little mini mountain ranges aside from the big ones like, you know, San Gabriel's, Santa Monica Mountains, San Bernardino, and so forth.
You know, outside of rocking the stormtrooper mask, Justin, I gotta say, you're killing it with the hiking apparel. You definitely got some swagger when you're on the trail. You know, some of it is the Just Trek merch that I see coming up, especially that windbreaker. How do you approach hiking apparel?
So as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, I came from the dance community. You know, I was a b-boy, which is the original term for breakdancer. Like, that was my life. That was like my community for so long. And a big part of, you know, being a part of that community, whether you were performing or battling, is you wanted not only your own original style and signature movement, but you wanted to look fresh while you were dancing, you know, whether that's from the shoes you're wearing, the shirt design, the bucket hat, the windbreaker. You know, there's so many styles of how you can play the part, but you just didn't want to look a sweaty bum with like knee pads. That's basically what you wanted to avoid. And sometimes people still dress like that, and it's just kind of like cringy, but I understand if that's you in the beginning, but that's part of the culture of hip hop and being a b-boy or b-girl is you got to look fresh. It's all about the presentation and the approach. So when I started having like hiking apparel, I definitely brought that with me because, you know, a lot of hiking apparel or outdoor gear is very, you know, it's very bland, not stylish, and very practical and a lot of utility, right? But I was like, why can't we have also gear that like we can represent and we feel cool wearing and that can also still be stylish and practical, right? And definitely that windbreaker. It's a champion windbreaker if anyone's curious. I like to call it the summit breaker. It makes so much sense for me and the Just Trek brand because I come from the b-boy world, the breaking world, and a windbreaker was a staple piece of your wardrobe because that's how you would do like power moves and backspins. But a windbreaker is the most perfect thing, you know, when you're hiking, whether you're trail running or whether you just want protection from the sun or you want to break the wind when you're on a windy summit such as a Mount Baldy. And also windbreakers are just stylish and they come in many different colors. So that's definitely one of our staple pieces as part of the merch line. So yeah, that's kind of been like my approach. Like I'm just trying to be genuine to like my roots and my background and the different colorways that spoke to me. And yeah, I would say like that's the gist of how I approach it.
You know, I'm slowly starting to see more pop and color when it comes to some of these staple outdoor brands that have been around for some time. But
totally.
I really like, you know, the color combinations that you're putting together for the Just Trek collection. And we'll put a link in the episode show notes so people can check it out. But I love that, you know, you're adding that swagger from the dance crews to the hiking crews, because, you know, it's been so many muted colors and options in the outdoor gear that bringing a little bit of color definitely pops and stands out.
I always have this phrase I say, I went from representing on the dance floors to the tallest of peaks now, like with the b-boy swagger.
I like that. You know, Justin, one thing that I did want to touch base on was the West Coast, especially California, got massive amounts of snow. And I think all our listeners saw it on the national news, but it was snowing in LA this winter. How was it going up to some of those hikes in the winter conditions that you guys experienced?
Absolutely insane. It was a historical time in Southern California on our local trails and mountains because of the constant rainstorms and thunderstorms and snowstorms that just kept slamming our region like almost on a weekly basis at one point. And what was so astounding was, so in the wintertime in LA County or Southern California, we do have peaks that get snow, but that's typically, you know, the tallest ones, like Mount Baldy is the tallest peak in all of LA County. San Gregorio is the tallest mountain in all of Southern California. It's brother mountain San Bernardino Peak typically has snow too. So, you know, mountains typically over 10,000 feet will have snow in the wintertime here, right? Every year. But when the snow system that came through this past winter came into town, it literally covered all the lower peaks, even as low as behind the Hollywood sign, Ivan. It transformed LA County. I thought I was like in the Swiss Alps. I've never been there, but you know, yeah, just trying to paint that visual of like when you go to like these countries that are outdoor meccas, you know, in the world, right? Like they're surrounded by snow-capped peaks. That was LA for a little bit, and it really brought to life that LA County has major peaks surrounding it, from the Santa Monicas to the San Gabriels, because you would see these mountains in the distance, but it was always kind of like it just looked like this wallpaper, like it wasn't real, like it was just like a backdrop, you know. But when it actually had snow, people really started to internalize like, whoa, there's mountains here and they're snow-capped, and wait, can I hike up there? Well, maybe I should explore there sometime or go out in that general direction. And I actually got to go on some of the most epic snow hikes ever on the lower peaks. Like I've been on snow hikes on the high elevation peaks, but yeah, I went on some pretty wild adventures, like on peaks that were like 3,000 feet tall, 5,000 feet tall. I'll never forget my hike to Inspiration Point via Echo Mountain. It was like a 10-mile total hike. I saw like waterfalls that were never there, going up like narrow snow ridges. I went by myself. I ran into another solo hiker, and then I had to like help almost kind of navigate us out of this like forest that was covered in snow that felt like it was going to avalanche. It was pretty wild.
I can only imagine. Yeah, I think I saw a couple clips of reporters out by the Hollywood sign getting people's reactions to the snow. It was something else to see those lower elevation mountains covered in snow this year. You know,
unreal. Absolutely unreal.
Hopefully it doesn't happen too frequently, but I'm glad you got to experience those low-level mountainscapes with snow this year compared to having to hike up, you know, to 10,000 feet.
Speaking of 10,000 feet, I just want to throw this in there quickly. It also also was a really intense time because Mount Baldy had people die on it this past winter season and a lot of search and rescues. And there's a famous actor that still hasn't been found yet, the Julian Pons guy in the Mount Baldy area. So this winter season was also a very sobering reality to how Mount Baldy really is a top three deadliest mountain in the United States because of its accessibility to the city, mixed in with the inexperience of hikers understanding that Mount Baldy in the wintertime is a completely different beast and monster. It is true mountaineering up there.
Yeah, I can only imagine, you know, it's a grueling hike outside of winter, but then you add snow, ice, and the windy conditions it could throw at you, and it adds just more and more layers of challenges.
Precisely. And it was also during this time when I started doing mountaineer training, like taking classes and just practicing on the lower slopes. I've actually done Mount Baldy as a mountaineering experience last year via the Baldy Bowl, and that was very exhilarating. But I told myself, like, okay, I need to like actually take classes and train even more because this is like a life or death kind of adventure.
I'm glad you were able to incorporate that, because I imagine that's probably something that's going to develop furthermore in your hiking adventures in the coming years to come.
And that's what I love about this hiking game. It's, there's many levels to it. You know, you can experience it as like mountaineering or canyoneering or yeah. or bouldering or free solo. I'm not gonna do free solo, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. Now Justin, we're halfway through 2023. Do you have any upcoming goals for the remainder of the year or just hiking goals in general beyond 2023?
So one major goal that I need redemption on is completing this peak bagging challenge called the Fool's Traverse Challenge. It's this 11 peak endurance challenge in the Mount Baldy area, which is hosted by our friends Traverse Outdoors, who is also a guest on the podcast. And as I mentioned, it's this 11 peak endurance challenge where participants, you know, tackle, you know, to hit as many peaks within like 24 hours to make them more eligible to win sponsor prizes in the community. Yeah, it's really rad. It's been going on for like 4 years now. And I the last time they hosted it was, I think, in 2021. I think it was October 2021. And it's pretty daunting, the challenge, because if you complete all 11 peaks, that means that you had completed 26 miles, up to 12,000 feet elevation gain, depending which route you do, and obviously 11 peaks, which is just like a godly... godly feat. And yeah. I also want to say, like, that's not necessarily the spirit of the event. It's more like you can go out and bag three peaks and that's your goal. Or yeah. If you want to do six peaks, it's what you want to make it. But, you know, me being also a competitive person, you know, coming from the B-boy world and also being a soccer player growing up, I wanted to complete all 11 peaks. And so when I first attempted it last year in 2021, I completed 8 of the 11, but my crewmate got injured. He hurt his knee. So I had to stop fantasizing about completing all 11, which already would have been... To complete the last three peaks would have been a godly feat already. But I didn't want to leave my crewmate and I wanted to make sure he got off the mountain safely. So I said, I'll attempt it next time. Like, the amount of miles I completed was still like 24 miles, close to 8,000 feet elevation gain. I did 8 of 11. Like, that's pretty major still. So this year, I signed up again and it's happening in October. And I'm coming back for a vengeance. I'm coming back for redemption. And I want to complete all 11 peaks. And that would be a very spiritual and, you know, endearing moment for myself. Just like every year, I always feel like I have to complete one really hard, daunting hiking challenge. And that's what I want for it to be this year, is to complete the Fool's Traverse Challenge in the Mount Baldy area. Aside from that, I would absolutely love to finally visit Sedona, Arizona. Just the red rocks out there and like the evergreen vegetation. Like, it looks like Sandstone Peak, but on crack. It looks otherworldly out there. My crewmate said it's one of his all-time favorite hikes ever was out there in Sedona. It's called like Bear Mountain. He said, if you love Sandstone Peak, you're going to lose your mind out there. So I definitely want to get out to Sedona at some point this year. I have this one solo traveler friend who also has a hiking group. Shout outs to Victor from LA Trail Killers. He's inspired me to just do some international exploring and hiking, like maybe to the mountainous cities in Colombia, like Medellin, or go to somewhere in Peru, like Huacachina, which is this like desert oasis. I definitely want to fit in an international trekking adventure before the year ends in 2023.
Oh, that'd be great, man. I know you're going to crush it this year on the challenge. And that's just nuts because, you know, you're basically hiking a marathon, but instead of, you know, low elevation gain, you're adding 8,000 plus to running a marathon at the same time, all in a day.
Yeah, it's crazy. I have no interest in doing a marathon, but I will happily try 26 miles and try to do 11 peaks.
Definitely, you know, I recommend the listeners to follow Justin on both his channels to keep up with that. We'll definitely be highlighting and shouting you out on that journey. And I'm glad you mentioned international trips, because lately I've been talking to people who have hiked in Ecuador, Peru, and Colombia has been recently, and Colombia just blows my mind on the views and the landscape there, with the tropical jungle, but then you also get the misty days of the rainforest. Yeah, it definitely has hiked up into my bucket list.
Absolutely. I have a friend out there that runs a hostel. It's called the Golden Elephant Hostel in Colombia. I forgot the name of the city. It's more of like in this more remote mountainside. If you ever go out there, I'll plug you into him.
Oh, right on. Appreciate that, Justin. Well, you know, one of the last questions that I like to ask you before we switch over to the this or that questions is, for any hikers that are interested in visiting LA and hitting some of the trails, what advice or tips would you give visitors that want to explore and hike in the LA hiking scene?
Bring some board shorts, because if you do some coastal hikes along the Santa Monica Mountains or Malibu, literally one of the absolute best things to do, especially in the summertime now that we're in it, is you do a coastal hike in Malibu, and then right afterwards you make it a beach day. So make sure you got those board shorts or those breathable hiking shorts so that you can dry off quickly. Also, if it's your first time visiting Los Angeles and you want to hike, I think it's a must to do the Wisdom Tree and go behind the Hollywood sign. That's a way different vantage point than just going to different parts of Griffith Park and or near Runyon Canyon and, you know, taking that photo that everybody else takes, you know, below the Hollywood sign. There's an actual trail that goes behind it. I'm not saying like onto the actual letters, because that's illegal.
Yeah.
Like, you'll actually get fined and a helicopter will come and yell at you. But that's an absolute must. The Wisdom Tree route to behind the Hollywood sign. If you can do that during sunset, it'll blow your mind away. Also, if you're first time in LA, highly recommend going up to the Griffith Observatory. You know, that's a signature thing to do. And if you're up there for sunset, even better, because it turns into the most beautiful night hike as well, because it's literally right next to the city and you just see this like electrical grid just like blowing your mind away. What also is another tip if you're visiting the LA hiking scene, I would say you don't need the big hiking boots. If you got a good pair of trail runners, you know, that'll get you through most of the hikes down here for sure. Yeah, I think that's what I got for you in terms of if you're a first time visitor. We got so much down here. Hit me up if you want some more specific recommendations. We got like so many different kinds of trails and terrain, whether you're a peak bagger lover or if you're more of like a, you know, coastal hiker, you want the Pacific Ocean views and deep canyon views. And a lot of our waterfalls finally came back to life, because the joke in town always for many years was if you went to an LA waterfall hike, you would never see water. It would be like a trickle. You wouldn't see shit.
Oh, and definitely you guys are having full-on waterfalls with the snowmelt that's coming off the mountains.
Oh, you bring up a good point. So, you know how you're talking about we got slammed with the historical snowstorms in the wintertime? If you weren't exploring the big peaks, everyone was doing waterfall hikes. Like, I went on the most majestic waterfall hikes ever that used to not have water, and I felt like I was back in Hawaii. It was to, like, that rebirth. The rebirth of the LA waterfall scene was so real, and I definitely took a part in that.
I can only imagine how it looked, especially with all the green vegetation that came back to life as well.
It was this winter season was, we never experienced it in like decades. It's one for the books.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Justin, that's it for the regular questions. This last portion of the podcast is the this or that questions. I'm going to be giving you two hiking related topics, and you basically choose the one that you prefer out of the two.
Let's get it. I'm ready.
All right. So the first one is, do you prefer ascending or descending?
Oh, man. Ascending. I love to embrace the grind.
Waterfalls or summits?
Summits.
Switchbacks or straight up?
Straight up. I love my Sufferfest.
And then do you do trek poles or are you more freehand?
I'm a really big hiking pole advocate. I love trekking poles, especially on the longer day hikes.
And then this is one of the newer ones, but trail runners or hiking boots?
I used to be hiking boots, if you asked me a couple years ago, but I'm for sure team trail runners now.
And when it comes to your trail systems, do you prefer a loop trail or an out and back trail?
Loop trail for sure, just so you can experience the varied landscapes of that area.
And when it comes to coming across bodies of water, do you prefer prefer to jump in or do you stay dry?
Always jump in because it's summertime and you're going to dry off anyways when you hike back to the trailhead. So it's a must to always jump in.
And then this one's the tough one, but sunsets or sunrises?
Sunsets. For sure. Don't get me wrong. Sunrises is its own spiritual journey, but I just feel like the sunsets I've seen in places all over LA, such as Sandstone Peak, are just, they're just unmatched.
And this one's another tough one, Justin, but spring flowers or fall colors?
Ooh, the East Coast in me is like clashing with this right now.
Yeah.
You said spring flowers or springtime flowers or fall colors? Ooh, this is a hard one. Yeah, I got to go with spring flowers at the moment. Yeah, okay. Because I've been getting much more into my native plant identification journey.
And this last one, it's probably the most divisive one, but when it comes to social media, do you tag a hike or do you not tag a hike?
Oof, it depends on the hike. Do you tag a hike or you don't tag a hike? It's very contextual for me, but for the sake of having an answer, I will say if it's a popular one, go ahead and tag it, you know. But if it's more of a remote location where you might feel like the casual person might not respect it, then maybe just tag it, but give the general area like Angeles National Forest, Santa Monica Mountain, so that at least they can do some research and, like, you know it's in that vicinity.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of hikers are going to that stance where if it's a well-known hike, don't gatekeep, you know, tag it. But if it's remote, you know, do a general tag. And some of my favorite hikes involved doing a little bit of research and finding mm-hmm. the exact location. And then when you reach it, it definitely adds another layer to it.
Yeah, that's part of the fun, doing the research and actually getting out there and getting maybe lost. Like when things are just given to you, I feel they don't mean as much. But if you can earn it, it means everything.
Well, Justin, it's been awesome to talk to you. You are definitely an amazing ambassador for the LA hiking scene, and you definitely have motivated me to, you know, next time I make it down there, to be able to do some hikes, and especially some of the tips that you've given and locations to check out. Definitely be adding those to the list. But for our listeners, if they want to follow not just you, but also Just Trek, what are some of the places they can find you online?
Yeah, so I'm very active on Instagram. Our handle is at Just Trek, J-U-S-T period T-R-E-K. I promote a lot of the podcast clips on there, our group hikes, and also just outdoor content on there. We also have a website. It's justtrek.net, J-U-S-T-T-R-E-K.net. You can find the podcast catalog. You can also find upcoming events on there, places that I've explored. I have like 2 trip reports up there, which isn't much. I also do have a Patreon page if anyone wants to support me. It's patreon.com/justtrek. Oh, and actually on the Patreon page, I have an exclusive podcast series on there called Trek Talks, where it's more of a raw and candid perspective of my outdoor adventures, where I literally record myself while hiking on the trail. So if anyone's just wants to support me or check out that series, it's patreon.com/justtrek. We are also on Facebook. I'm not as active on there, but we do have a bit of a presence. It's facebook.com/justtrekofficial. And I believe that's where we are all online. So I hope you guys follow me, follow the journey and get inspired from it. And yeah, come join us on the hike sometime, or maybe listen to a podcast episode.
Definitely. And we'll be sure to add all those links in the episode show notes so people can check them out. Justin, it's been awesome talking to you and hearing your journey with hiking and just hearing more about the LA hiking scene. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to speak with us.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be on the show. And I want to give you your props. I know I mentioned it a bit earlier, but you're the first outdoor podcaster that I ever reached out to be like, yo, I'm down for a conversation. So I just want to let you know that.
Appreciate it, Justin. And if you ever wanted to do a collab Just Trek Hikes and Mikes podcast episode, I'd be more than game for that.
Let's make it happen. And I hope to have you down here in LA at some point to join us on a hike or collaborate. And I hope to visit you out in the Washington state and explore like the Cascade Mountain ranges up there.
Oh, definitely. You know, I'll definitely be going to the next Star Wars hike. And
flight is booked already, huh?
Yeah. And I'll show you the Eastern Cascades. You've gotten to check out the Western Cascades, but the Eastern Cascades are like my Eastern Sierra. So I'll definitely, if you ever make it up here, I'll show you what the Eastern Cascades have to show.
Is there a bunch of those majestic mountain goats on that side especially?
So many. And there's a couple bighorn sheep herds in and around the lower levels.
Oh, man. I'm never going to forget that as one of my Pacific Northwest experiences, seeing those majestic mountain goats. sorts. That was special.
Well, Justin, it's been a pleasure, man. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you once again for Justin for joining us on the latest bonus episode of the Hikes and Mikes podcast. Be sure to follow Just Trek on Instagram at just.trek. And be sure to check out the links in the episode show notes to check out his podcast, merch, and the website. We'll be putting out bonus episodes throughout the spring and summer, along with our regular episodes on Monday. Please be sure to like and subscribe to not miss out on those. Be sure to also follow us on Instagram at Hikes and Mikes. Happy trails, everyone. This episode's music was created by Ketza. Follow him on Instagram at Ketza Music. This episode is brought to you by Flip Socks. Whether you're on the trail, on the job, or in the yard, Flip Socks will keep Mother Nature out of your boots with their innovative nylon sleeve. You no longer need to worry about any annoying debris getting trapped in your boots during your hikes. Simply flip down the nylon sleeve over any boot to prevent Mother Nature from finding its way inside, keeping your feet comfortable all day long. To get your first pair, visit flipsockswithaz.com and enter promo code HikesMikes10 at checkout to receive 10% off your order. And for listeners who use the promo code at checkout, I'll be donating 100% of the Season 2 promo code proceeds to Big City Mountaineers, who provide transformative experiences through connections to nature that strengthen life skills and build community for youth and disinvested communities across the nation. So if you're tired of bits and pieces of the trail finding its way into your hiking boots, pick up a pair of Flip Socks today with the promo code HikesMikes10 to get 10% off. For website and promo code, see the episode description.